Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Tammy Bruce, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. How many high school students in Virginia got merit scholarships but didn't get to use them in college applications or apply for scholarship money because they didn't even know they'd received the award? The state's attorney general says he's investigating.
I do think nationally you've generally seen the trend line of I call it a war on merit, where it seems like we want to have forced equal outcomes, not equality of opportunity. And I think that goes against who we are as Americans.
I'm Dave Anthony. You have probably either noticed or heard about how expensive a certain food is right now. But don't worry, that inflation could be over. Easy.
These prices are not the new normal. These prices are exceptionally high because of a confluence of factors.
And I'm Brian Kilmeade. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Multiple high schools in Northern Virginia did not tell specific students they'd been the recipients of merit awards from the National Merit Scholarship Corporation. It started with a report about Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, an elite public school one must apply to. At the end of December, Fairfax County Public Schools said in a statement, every year they notify students who get this merit award. They understand this year, though, those notifications did not go out in a timely manner. Then the Fairfax superintendent, Michelle Reed, said it was a one-time human error.
Well, I'd like to point out that this was not a one-time error. This is actually a systemic pattern of injustice that's been occurring since 2017.
Harry Jackson's children attend Thomas Jefferson. He told Fox News in early January this failure has impacted hundreds of students, their college applications, and their ability to get scholarship money. At least 6 other Fairfax District high schools now admit they also failed to notify students of their awards, and now some schools in Prince William and Loudoun counties are admitting they did the same. Jackson, who's with the parents group Save Merit, says he believes this is related to a recent shift within the district.
This is what equal outcomes looks like under the new equity agenda that's being pushed under the One Fairfax policy that we see here in Fairfax County Public Schools, where now students and their opportunities, their pathway to prosperity is now being denied to them.
Superintendent Reed met with parents at several Fairfax County schools last week. One of them said she had a hard time believing this is a coincidence among multiple schools, but Reed said sometimes the truth is hard to believe. She also said they're investigating. One parent asked if the district would reimburse students who lost out on scholarship money. Vanessa Hall is a mother of a student in the district.
And I frankly think that the group that issues these certificates really needs to come up with a better process for communicating with parents and students.
Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin, whose campaign was centered around education and parents' rights issues, said these schools have a maniacal focus on equal outcomes for all students at all costs and that that's hurting students. The state's top law enforcement official is now investigating.
Well, to be honest with you, the first time we started looking into Fairfax Public School was actually regarding Thomas Jefferson High School's admissions policies.
Jason Miaris is Virginia's attorney general.
We had several members of the Asian American community who said our kids are being discriminated against. Thomas Jefferson is considered the best public high school in the country. You have to apply to attend. We saw a new equity policy that was put in place with the admission standards that, at least by percentage, saw a dramatic drop in the percentage of Asian American students enrolled. And so we started looking at whether it violated the admissions policy, it violated the Virginia Human Rights Act, which is Virginia's principal anti-discrimination statute. Around the same time that we were starting to look into TJ was when the stories broke in numerous outlets regarding the failure to notify them of the National Merit Commendation. And The school system at first said that it was one-time human error. Now we know of several schools now in Loudoun County, also in Northern Virginia as well. So it seems to be we're covering more schools that had participated in this failure to notify, not just one. And it's very, very disturbing.
Yeah, parents of these students said this impacted their early college and university application processes, that they weren't able to include these awards or even apply for the scholarship money in time. Were these parents and students able to or trying to now add those awards?
Some of the students that were notified found out after they had already graduated from high school. And I know of at least one Virginia college that says if you're a national merit commendation recipient, you are eligible for a full 4-year tuition free at the school. And that's worth between $90,000 to $100,000, these students. And I could tell you, I'm a child of an immigrant. How you're going to pay for college, it can be as stressful as which college you get admitted into. Yeah. And the fact that for a lot of these students, English is not even the primary language spoken at home. Education is the doorway to the America dream. The fact that they could have been able to attend college tuition free, I think, is infuriating for so many parents. And a lot of people wondering, how do we get here? We're trying to determine exactly the pathway. I know this, that Michelle Reed, the superintendent of Fairfax Schools, hired an equity consultant, paid them $455,000 for about 9 months of work. One of their recommendations to the school district was an equity-centered strategic plan in which, quote, equal outcomes for every student without exception, end quote. Mm-hmm. And also they said that to receive these equal outcomes, even if it meant you had to be, quote, purposefully unequal to other students. And so we're trying to determine, did this mean purposefully discriminating against Asian American students? We know that we saw the drop in enrollment at TJ. We know at least one public report that administrators didn't want to notify the students because it would, quote, hurt the feelings of some of the other students. And I think there's a lot of troubling questions that have arisen out of this, and that's why we're doing the investigation to get the answers.
Yeah, the Fairfax Times has an interesting piece on this. It came out at the end of December, and the reporter who wrote the piece said it turned out, as parents were comparing notes on this, that this might have been going on since 2017, that their students weren't being notified of these merit scholarships. And that was at the time that Thomas Jefferson got a new high school principal. I wonder if you've spoken to that principal yet or anyone in your office has, because if this has been going on for years, then it probably wasn't the influence of that hiring of the equity company, right, which was just hired in mid-2022.
Well, we are trying to confirm all of those reports. That's our goal, is to separate separate the facts and make sure we know exactly what is happening. You know, you hear this word equity all the time, and
right. The
point I like to make is equity without excellence is emptiness. And probably the most troubling thing on a national level we've seen at a lot of different schools, particularly in the Ivy League, is Asian American students are being treated the exact same way Jewish American students were treated, or very similarly, about 100 years ago. 100 years ago, these elite institutions capped the number of Jewish American students they would admit in, and they were purposely discriminating against them. And we look back at those policies from 100 years ago with horror. Well, now we see a lot of these elite institutions around the nation that are capping and limiting how many Asian American students can be enrolled. And if it was wrong 100 years ago to discriminate against Jewish American students, it's wrong to do that against Asian American students now. And that's what we're trying to determine is in Northern Virginia with these schools, both the admissions policy, the failure to notify the national merit recipients, is was there a violation of our state anti-discrimination lawsuit discriminating against someone because of their ethnic or racial background? You know, I had one mom tell me, my daughter has done everything right since the first grade. She has studied incredibly hard, and I'm realizing that her dream to attend Thomas Jefferson High School is likely going to be denied to her, not because of anything she has done, but because of simply who she is, because she's Korean American. That should infuriate every American. That goes against the very notion that we're going to judge people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. So we want to get to the bottom of it. We're going to be both fearless and deliberate. That's what I tell the investigators on my team. Those are the two qualities I expect of them. And we're going to get to the truth of what happened.
Tell me a little bit about the possible legal consequences here. I know in the National Merit Scholarship Group, I know they've told high schools, you know, please notify these kids that they're recipients of this award immediately. This is their only notification. But you're investigating beyond that, right? As you've said, you're talking about admissions policies. So what is the rule or law in place that these high schools may have violated?
Well, listen, I mean, if it is state-sanctioned bigotry is wrong. And it seems to me, and at least nationally we've seen, it seems to be okay to have state-sanctioned bigotry against Asian American students. If that is happening in Virginia, we do determine that they have violated the Virginia Human Rights Act. We essentially put them on notice. You're in violation. You need to resolve this. You try to reach essentially a settlement with the school districts. If not, if they're not willing to reach a settlement, then you take them to court in order to have a judge order them so they make sure they're in compliance with the Virginia Human Rights Act. And that's our goal. We want to find out what happened because we want to correct the problem if it is indeed a violation of our state statute.
You mentioned that you're looking also at Loudoun County. I know they have an equity program as well. In their case, their equity program states on the website, they'd like to develop and utilize an equity lead network for the professional learning and support of equity leads and leveraging equitable outcomes across the school division. Equitable outcomes might not be equal outcomes for all, no exception, like it was in the case in Fairfax. But are you looking at all counties' equity programs and what they entail or what they mean?
Listen, what we're doing is we're informing every single parent that if you feel like your child has been discriminated against or hurt because of their background and being denied a possible benefit, contact their Office of Civil Rights. You can go to my webpage, the Attorney General of Virginia's webpage, and you could fill out a form, a complaint. We take every single complaint through to our Civil Rights Office quite seriously. We review it. Obviously, we're reviewing Loudoun. We're getting unconfirmed reports of possible other school districts in Northern Virginia. And we're going to just go where the facts may lead. That's going to be our number one goal. But to the extent that withholding any of these awards or any of these recognition, that if it was based on race, national origin, or any other protected status under Virginia Human Rights Act, that's unlawful. And that's why our office exists. I do think nationally, you've generally seen the trend line of I call it a war on merit, where it seems like we want to have forced equal outcomes, not equality of opportunity. And I think that goes against who we are as Americans. And we want to make sure nobody's being denied their dream because of who they are.
You're looking into Fairfax County at an interesting time, right? Because the Supreme Court took up cases that could result in ending or reducing affirmative action policies at universities. I think they're UNC, University of North Carolina, and Harvard. When you put what some high schools are doing into a world that might not have affirmative action moving forward at universities, like what happens with that juxtaposition of those two systems?
Well, I mean, that's federal litigation based on interpretations of the 14th Amendment. But what we're looking at is much more focused on state law. I could tell you what is a little bit infuriating for me, for a lot of these families, is for so many of them, these are immigrant families. I'm a child of an immigrant. And I know that education in many ways is a doorway to the American dream for so many immigrant families. For a lot of these high achieving students, English is not even the primary language spoken at home. They have come here. The immigrant story is you're denying in many ways your opportunity to pursue your own dreams in hopes that your children can achieve what you can't. I know that was the case with my mother who fled Cuba. And the idea that some of these children that have come from such amazing backgrounds, their families have come here and very much the representation of the last best hope on earth, as Abraham Lincoln described America. Mm-hmm. And the fact that their educational opportunities are being curtailed or recognition, that breaks my heart. And if it's being done because they feel like we are recognizing too many Asian students or admitting too many Asian students, if that is the case, that's where we're conducting our investigation to make sure they reform themselves.
Virginia Attorney General Jason Miaris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This is Brian Kilmeade with your Fox News commentary, coming up.
Affording a dozen eggs these days isn't what it's cracked up to be.
We've definitely scaled back how many eggs we're consuming, but it definitely hits us in the pocketbook.
And he's not exaggerating. Prices surged up 11% last month from November. Year over year, the inflation's even more extensive. 60% pricier. Why? Let's examine.
Feed has always been my number one cost, so in the last year, my feeds went up over 50%.
Chris Olson with Milagro Farms is exasperated in Texas.
That was the number one reason I had to raise my prices.
But there are other factors exacerbating the problem.
The cost of my packaging, the cost of gas to bring my eggs to market.
And there's one more reason prices are extreme.
One of the larger drivers of this is the highly pathogenic avian influenza or bird flu.
Dr. Jada Thompson is assistant professor of agriculture economics at the University of Arkansas.
It kills a lot of birds when they get it. It's something like 95% mortality rate. And so then in trying to stop and control that disease has led to the depopulation and mortality of something like 50 million birds so far. And most of those are layers. So I think the last count was 57 million birds in the U.S. with the predominantly more than 80% of those being layers, which are producing our eggs. And so when you take those out of the system, that's led to the shortage of layer supply, and so, which leads to shortage of eggs. And so we're down about 5 to 6% of our layer supply, which is leading to a shortage in our egg supply right
yeah.
now.
You talked about depopulation. That's a nice way of saying that you basically had to kill 50 million birds.
Well, and in a clarification, like some of those died because of the disease.
Okay.
And we think about this a little bit in terms of the highly pathogenic avian influenza kills birds very rapidly. So, you know, just anecdotal stories, somebody walks in their turkey house in the morning and the bird's kind of seeming a little bit of respiratory distress. And by the afternoon, those birds are dead.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's a very fast moving disease in commercial production.
Okay.
And so, yeah, some of those were having to be killed in order to try to stop the spread of that. By the time that you've tested one, that all of those birds do have it. It's also a thing that those birds wouldn't be able to make it to market anyway because they would be sick. And then what you're doing is you're allowing that disease, those virus to continue to grow, which would increase the potential spread to other farms and to other flocks and birds.
And the disposal of 50 million birds, are they incinerated? Is that what happens?
There are multiple disposal pathways, and so incineration is definitely one of those. It's large scale. It requires a lot of heat, a lot of energy sources. Producers can have plans in place for burial. There's a lot of composting that happens at a large scale that just makes the length of recovery a little bit longer because you have to wait till the full compost happens. You could also have landfills where some of these mortalities, large-scale mortality, go to landfill. But then you also have municipality rules and regulations associated with that. So those are going to be the top methods for disposal. And it's going to depend on local, state, and federal regulations in your locality.
Where are we with the virus now?
Not where we would have liked to have seen it. So typically what has happened in the past with other strands of HPI or bird flu, by the time it fall rolled around, it kind of died off. This one did not, and it's the same one that we've seen in Europe. It's starting up in Asia. It's not dying off like we normally see. Part of this is host adaptability, so wild birds are getting it and not getting sick as much as we see in these other commercial birds, which is a unique situation that the temperature didn't kill it off, and so it's still in our system. And as migratory birds are moving down south, you know, there's a lot of surveillance and monitoring going on to try to mitigate it coming back into the supply. You know, in our layer birds and our broilers and our turkeys to try to maintain a healthy food supply.
Okay.
But that's definitely on the horizon that we got to look out for.
So you said this affects mostly egg layers. So as far as the cost of chicken that we eat, not as affected as the cost of eggs.
Up until this point, correct. So, you know, there's some of those, there have been broilers that have, broilers, the chickens that we eat have been impacted, but not to the same level as the layers. And that's partially for two reasons. One is just geographically, like that's just where the concentration of production has been, is in this Midwest area, and that's mostly layers and turkeys. And broilers, the chickens we eat, are a lot more in the Southeast. Another factor is that this strain of bird flu impacts older birds slightly more than it does younger birds. And so layers have to be sexually mature. They're a little bit older. And so they're slightly more susceptible to it than the younger birds that eventually turn into food for us.
See, we're learning something. Layers and broilers. I didn't know that that's how you separate poultry in the industry. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I mean, my friends joke I'm a chickenologist. These are like the baselines. If you call them a chicken, we just have to ask, what do you mean when you're talking about chickens? So like whether we're eating them or we're consuming their eggs.
Yeah, no, understood. Now, let's go to the other factors here as to the cost being up so much as it is versus a year ago. The inflation that farmers are paying, I'm assuming, for fuel and feed has to be a factor here.
Yeah, substantially. So you have, so we talk fuel and feed, and we're going to include a few other factors into this as well. But also the cartons, the packaging, the cleaning materials, all of those other factors that they get an egg from the farm and to the grocery store and to my household. Feed prices are up something like, corn is up 23% year over year. So we're looking at across the board when your most substantial cost is feed coming into to raising these birds. And those prices are up. And that's slightly driven by a little bit of inflation, a little bit of just weather and temperature and fluctuations in the feed market. And also the war in Ukraine is going to impact that. So if you have wheat and sunflowers that are out of production and then everybody's having to compensate for those, it increases the feed across the board and effectively will increase our feed prices to the layers.
Now, for us consumers, we can adapt, maybe scale back on how many eggs we buy. We don't have to get the big 30-pack or whatever, and we can look for deals where we find them. Will Vermillion at Vermillion Farms in Texas says, consider buying direct.
Farmers markets are now starting to get either right in line or underneath the prices that you're seeing in the grocery stores.
But even if you don't buy that many eggs or don't like them, you eat a lot more of them than you might think.
So the average consumer in America is going to consume about 288 eggs a year. And that's not eggs we're consuming at home. I mean, yes, my mom, she's consuming more, right? She eats eggs for breakfast. Most of those eggs are not necessarily in the kind of egg form that we would think of. Most of those are coming in those other baked goods or those products that are breads and other things that we're consuming on a day-to-day basis. And so those two different markets have two different kind of production supply chains. And that's also what's leading to these kind of change in prices is, you know, we had this really high seasonal demand at Thanksgiving and Christmas. People want to have their deviled eggs and their baked pies that they're going to make at home. And then you also had this really high production demand for pies and cakes and all these other things where we have this high demand. And so you have this high seasonal demand and you have a shortage of supply and you have to figure out where to send these eggs. Do you send them to the grocery store? Do you send them to the processing? Usually you can get a slightly better deal if you're consuming or buying more eggs at one time. In terms of the, is this going to get better? I mean, we can already say, talked about the production and inflation. We're already seeing the prices coming down in terms of the wholesale market. And so that will reflect in the retail. I mean, I think last prices were 10 or 15 cents down per dozen of eggs. I don't know how low that's going to go. And I think that we'll continue to see those come down as more and more birds come online and we get to see, we see the supply start coming back up. Again, on the horizon is bird flu still exists. I don't think that this is a short-term price is what I'm trying to get at, that these prices are not the new normal. These prices are exceptionally high because of a confluence of factors.
On the side of the producers, baked goods, it's going to always be tougher on the small baker, somebody who specializes in cookies, doesn't have, you know, 50 locations, things like that. You've probably seen sometimes on the news, they'll go talk to someone who is barely making it anymore with the cost of eggs and with the cost of other items. How much more difficult is it for the small business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we start thinking about small versus large, we're talking about economies of scale. You know, you talked about that 30 count on the consumer side, right? Buying a 30 count versus a dozen eggs. And I think on the smaller producer, they don't get to have those discounts at larger quantities, right? Like, so they're buying smaller quantities, arguably for the size of their operation. I think across the board, big and small businesses are having to kind of bear the burden of this increased cost on all goods, including eggs. But yeah, there would be this small producers or small kind of bakeries and these other folks would be kind of having to, their prices are going to have to reflect this change in the cost of production.
Nabisco and all the big companies out there, they can get by with shrinkflation and things like that, where they just make the packages a little bit smaller, much more than the small business can do, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you can see some shrinkflation in small bakeries. It's harder, though, when you have somebody coming in day in and day out and looking at a cookie and you know, trying to say, hey, I'm going to sell you this same cookie at a higher price. because the value proposition, right, is what am I buying? I'm buying this artisanal or this, the specialty cookie or the specialty cakes and pies. And now either I'm getting a smaller amount or I'm going to have to pay more. And sometimes that sticker shock can be a little bit much.
If we do see this bird flu persist worse than we had hoped, and you talked about how it's not acting like others in the past, and we don't see a big reduction in feed prices, do you think that there are ways where this doesn't come down for a little while?
I don't think that we will see the same price we saw in December of 2022. So this last month when egg prices were at their highest that they've been, I don't think that that's what we're going to continue to see. And so I think the inflation and all of these other factors, barring anything that's going to really drop them down, is going to continue to impact our food markets. I think the hope is that they will come down, though. I don't think that we're going to see them staying at the high. I think everything is pointing to these prices are already starting to come down. We're already seeing inflation kind of dropping a bit, and that will help ease the pocketbooks for you and I as consumers.
Dr. Jada Thompson, Assistant Professor of Agricultural Economics at the University of Arkansas. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Brian Kilmeade. What's on your mind?
Top of my mind today, the mayor of New York, because he made himself a national figure by doing something I was calling for 7 months ago, going down to the border to see how bad it is for yourself. Why? Because the mayor of El Paso was sending busloads of illegal immigrants to New York City. They signed a paper. They did it because they hear the streets are paved with gold. And when they came here, there's no place for them. We built a tent city. We take down a tent city. We put them in hotels. They wreck the hotels. There's about 30,000 illegals here right now, maybe 40, and 5,500 at least from El Paso. So the mayor went down to see for himself what's going on in Texas. And what he found out, it is terrible. And not to blame the mayor, not to blame the Republican governor, not to credit or discredit him, blame the federal government. But Mr. Mayor, go the next word and step. Don't blame FEMA. Blame the president. And you could do it in a polite, respectful way. Disappointed in the president not understanding the urgency of what's happening here. You are now in a mayor's conference, at which time you're going to get together on a strategy. Mr. Mayor, you're all just mayors. You'll have the same frustration as the governors. It is all about the president. You're in Washington, D.C. Go to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Tell the president off the record you need to speak and fix the problem. I don't care about the Republicans. I don't care about the Democrats. I care about 4 million illegals here. Who knows what they're up to? And is it fair for people that wait in line? Mr. Mayor, in this city, you can make a difference in this country and make yourself a national figure. Do it. And by the way, get rid of the sanctuary status. Shut off the magnet. I'm Brian Kilmeade, and that's my view for the Fox News Rundown.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.